Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis, filling in for Dave Schrader this week. And I'm going to change things up a little bit here, folks. I'm going to call an audible. I know I said today was Gary Busey. I know I got you all excited. I got you all ready for some Busey madness. I'm going to wait until tomorrow for that. I got kind of swept up in the Elvis documentaries this weekend. Watching the 40th anniversary of Elvis's death was yesterday. I got sitting down on the couch this weekend watching different documentaries on different channels about the death of Elvis. And I was sitting here thinking to myself, you know, we have a perfectly good show sitting in our archives with Gail Brewer Giorgio. Now, you may say, Tim, for you younger folks, who is Gail Brewer Giorgio? Gail Brewer Giorgio wrote a novel in 1978 called Orion. Orion was the story of a masked singer who sounded a lot like Elvis, who basically faked his own death and continued performing behind a mask. And a lot of people thought that maybe it was a story reminiscent of maybe Elvis faking his own death. And soon enough, there was a performer who came out under the name Orion, and it turned out to be a man by the name of Jimmy Ellis. However, he sounded a lot like Elvis, and people thought maybe it was Elvis himself. And so began the conspiracy theories. Gail Brewer Giorgio really kind of stoked the flames of the Elvis conspiracy theories, and she released 5 books having to do with whether Elvis was alive or dead. And she is the foremost, I guess you could say, authority on the conspiracy theory when it comes to the Elvis conspiracy. So we had her on the program, and Dave went one-on-one with Gail Brewer Giorgio and addressed some of those sticking points, some of the more famous rumors that are out there, some of the more famous, I guess some people would call them facts as to why they think Elvis is still alive, and some of the not-so-known quote-unquote facts as to why Elvis, or why people think Elvis is still alive. That's all contained in this show today with Gail Brewer Giorgio. Also, Elvis's former hairdresser stops by, talks a little bit about Elvis during his lifetime and some metaphysical aspects of Elvis that we didn't know about as well. So that all coming up right now on Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. This evening, we're going to take things a little different. Usually, we delve into the world of ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, and all the weird stories of the supernatural. Tonight, though, we're going to look at a little bit of a conspiracy and cover-up theory. Our guest is Gail Brewer Giorgio. She is the author and investigator. She's joining us for the first time tonight. Gail has been involved in the last 20 years in exposing what could be one of the biggest cover-ups on the planet. Is Elvis dead? Well, that's a question she first asked almost 20 years ago in her book of the same name. Gail has provided some of the most stunning clues regarding the alleged death of the King of Rock and Roll, and we're going to be sharing them tonight with you. Whether you're a believer or just a casual observer, Gail makes a compelling argument that Mr. Presley did in fact fake his death and may be still living today amongst us. Gail is finishing her newest book, The Secret Mr. Presley, and will share some incredible facts about Elvis with us. Gail, I'm happy to have you join us here on the show tonight. This is, as I told you on the phone when we first did our pre-interview, I was a big fan of the original book in 1988 and the subsequent follow-ups. And I just thank you for taking the time to be on the show and spend time with us tonight and talk about this.
Well, I'm glad I met that one fan.
Oh, stop. What'd you sold 1.5 million copies of this book in, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, we actually sold more, but, that was the first 3 weeks we did. And then we went all over the world. I have my books in Japanese and French. I can't read them.
Right.
So if they made errors, I wouldn't have known.
Well, let me ask you this, Gail. Let's get a little background on you first. How did you get involved? I mean, were you a big Elvis fan to begin with?
No, I wasn't. It was kind of strange. A lot of people don't know some of the things I'm going to tell you because I'm on with you a little bit longer than I'm normally on. When I was in Jacksonville, Florida, when I was just a teenager, one of my teachers was a woman named May Axton. Of course, I knew my teacher as Mrs. Axton. What turned out with Mrs. Axton is that she started working for a man on her off hours where she was hunting talent. And she would book the talent on his country fair shows. She went to a little club, and she saw this teenager with a couple backups, and she hired him for the country fair. Of course, it was Elvis Presley.
Okay.
The truth is, May Axton is the one who discovered Elvis, and the Colonel didn't even see Elvis to begin with on the country show that he was booked on. May gave me one of the hand pamphlets they gave out at the concerts then, and Hank Snow was the featured artist, and of course the other artists on the handbill were, you know, unknowns basically. They have Elvis's name spelled wrong, so I guess, I guess I have a collector's item.
No
here.
Doubt, before he was known as anything, right? Just
Yeah. So I knew May quite well. Of course, I didn't, no one knew who Elvis Presley was then, so the fact that she was booking on country fairs and that she booked a talent named Elvis Presley didn't mean much back then.
Right.
Because he wasn't known. So that was kind of my first, I guess, real connection. May later went on to become quite well known in the music world, and she wrote Elvis's first big hit, Heartbreak Hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you didn't know May's name, she wrote it with a fellow named Tommy Durden. And if you didn't know May's name, you do know the song Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, of course, in those days, when I knew May, Elvis wasn't Elvis. And then I moved to Pennsylvania and lost contact with May.
Now, she's also the mother of Hoyt Axton, the actor,
correct,
right?
Correct, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I lost, you know, contact, as you do with your school teachers. And back up a little bit, I didn't know she had written Heartbreak Hotel because I had moved from Florida to Pennsylvania. And when Heartbreak Hotel came out and I saw Elvis on TV and so forth, I didn't have any connection in my mind that May wrote it, because you hear a song, but they don't say who wrote it.
Right.
So, you know, it was kind of a blurry time with my connection with May. Many, many years later, and I'm sure you do this in a lot of your shows, what we think is coincidence probably isn't coincidence.
Exactly, right.
But I had gotten into writing. Well, you know, I ended up in Hawaii first, and worked for the Methodist ministry, which was, we were the mission then. This was before Hawaii even became a state. So I was there, and then I got into writing basically at an ad agency, moved back to the States, and did like everybody did, you know, who wants to be a writer, found all these rejection slips and put little hearts on them and things
sure.
like that. But I was writing for newspapers and, you know, kind of cutting my teeth and then skipping ahead quite a bit. I wrote a book called Orion, and a friend of mine in the music business said to me, God, this book sounds like you knew Elvis Presley. She said, it's just incredible. She said, I want to send it up to a friend of mine in the music business. She didn't even tell me who it was. She said, I want her to look at this, because she knew Elvis very, very well. The end result was that the woman was May Axton. Now, again, it just didn't dawn on me that Mrs. Axton was May Axton. If you remember, when you know your school teacher.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know him as May, right.
Yeah. And so, you know, too many years had passed, and it just, the light bulb didn't go on. But anyway, we were invited up to Nashville. Her name was Carol Halupke, was a songwriter. She was a song, in fact, she was a songwriter for the state of Georgia. And we went up there to this Tara-like mansion, which is in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And the door opened, and I went, oh, my God. And May asked and went, oh, my God, I don't believe it either. Here it was my eighth grade school teacher.
Very cool.
Yeah. It was really, really amazing.
What was her take on this book when you got it to her?
Oh, she couldn't. She absolutely could not get over what I knew on Orion.
Book Orion, why don't you give a little bit of background so people know a little bit about this book as well, which you'd written.
It's a novel. It's about a superstar and just goes through his life and so forth. And a lot of things that I wrote in the book were not known to the public. I didn't know it. I made it all up. And May said, I couldn't have made it up. She said, too many of these things happened. And it's funny because some years after Orion came out, and that was published first by Simon & Schuster and Pocket Books and so forth, after it came out, Priscilla Presley wrote her book, Elvis and Me. Now, remember, it was after I wrote Orion, and she wrote in her book things that happened personally between Elvis and her that I had written as fiction in my book without ever knowing that it ever happened.
Now, did your book come out prior to his death, or did it come out after?
No, it came right after his death, but I was writing it prior to his death.
Okay.
So that's kind of that little connection as far as May and I hooking up. And it was really, you know, kind of a wonderful reunion because May was very, very nice. When I say she was my school teacher, they had a school newspaper. And if you remember back to your school days, you can remember easier than I can probably. But you know, every class had its reporter, right?
Right.
And we used to turn little articles into our school paper and so forth, you know, who's going with who and little things like that. And May was, because she was an English teacher, she was the editor of, the teacher editor of the paper. And so she would correct everything, go over our stories and help us and that sort of thing. So we even had a closer relationship than you would if you were really in the classroom. May later told me that I had met Gladys Presley through her, but I don't recall that happening. She said we had moved to the beach. My parents and the family had moved from Jacksonville down to Neptune Beach, and May used to come down because she had a friend that lived there. And she said that she had called me, and we had met at a place called the Chicken in the Basket. And she said that with her that day was Gladys Presley. Well, you go back again, Elvis wasn't Elvis, so if she had a friend with her named Gladys Presley, it wouldn't
It wouldn't matter to you. It wasn't a standalone. This wasn't
an eighth grade student.
Right.
You know, you probably don't even know your parents' friends' names. And so, but she said I did meet her that day. And I do remember meeting people besides Gladys. Through May, but I wish I could have said it was a memorable meeting, but because he wasn't who he was, I was just an eighth grader. But I guess I was drawn into this circle through whatever attachments are out there in the universe. I mean, it was very, very, very strange that this could occur.
Now, your book Orion, though, it dealt with the character very much like an Elvis character. And did he fake his own death in that book as well?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what was so interesting.
Now, you got to remember this. Remember, kids, the name of this story is called Orion.
Orion,
it's written,
yeah.
And this is going to come into play a little bit later in the show. We're going to talk about another Orion that had a strange connection to Elvis, and we'll go through all of this. You're going to take a serious drink out of a fire hose tonight. We're going to start pounding you with information.
You probably do have me on the right show because it is bizarre.
That is right. But now, are you familiar with Larry Geller?
Oh, yes. Elvis's hairdresser.
Right. Larry is going to join us a little bit later for a few minutes.
He's a wonderful man.
Right. He's going to join us as well. As fate would have it, again, as you know, happy happenstance would go. Turns out our good friend Christine Letterman, who's with Perfectly Paranormal, she does all the bookings of our events for us and helps out. She's related to Larry. It's like her uncle. And she said, I just read this about the show that you're doing with Elvis. My uncle is Larry Geller and was the hairstylist for Elvis. And he did Elvis's hair in the, you know, for the funeral. You should talk to him tonight. And he agreed to come on for a few minutes. So we're going to discuss that too, because there's some strange stories that took place with Elvis in the coffin, and we want to cover that. But now let's get into we'll take a break here. We'll come back and we'll start getting into the strangeness of Elvis's death. And I've got a little blurb here I want to read when we come back that kind of gives a strange timeline as well. So stay tuned. We're talking to Gail Brewer, Giorgio. We're talking about the strange lives of Mr. Elvis Presley. We'll be doing more of that right here on Darkness Radio. Now, hey, this is something interesting, and I found this bit of information. You tell me if this is correct, okay? Sure. Here's the timeline. Elvis Presley was pronounced dead at 2:56 p.m. Between that time and when the body was viewed the next day, there had to be enough time to do all the following. An autopsy and embalming were completed. The body was back at Memphis Funeral Home by 8 p.m. 16 white limousines were ordered. A white Cadillac hearse was readied. A specially designed casket was ordered and flown in. A casket blanket of 500 red roses was made. The security and police were ordered. The tour was canceled. Personal calls were made by Vernon to fan club presidents asking them not to attend. Clothing was chosen, songs were chosen, ministers were contacted, the procession planned, and the body was put out on private display by 11:30 the next morning.
Absolutely, and in fact, Colonel Parker had T-shirts ready to sell at the gate. He had all kinds of memorabilia.
T-shirts? What kind of T-shirts? I went to Graceland and all I saw was a dumb corpse. Is that what he said?
Elvis T-shirts. He had all kinds of memorabilia. The fans were buying them. They were all ready, and that kind of raised a little bit of wonder about perhaps he had powers we didn't know, but to have all that. But yes, you're right. All those things were taken care of, and in fact, May Axton was one of the people Vernon called to tell her not to come to the funeral, and he told her it was not Elvis in the coffin. She told me that.
Well, I'm just surprised. I mean, aside from Kennedy, what other celebrity has been turned around in less than a 24-hour span and ready to be shown?
And, I don't know.
And placed out there. Now, the other strange thing was that by the orders of Presley's estate, no cameras could be brought to the funeral. Although one of Elvis's own relatives, Bobby Mann, managed to sneak one in, and the picture he took is the one that appeared on the cover of the National Enquirer.
Right.
And that picture... Google it, folks. Google the National Enquirer Elvis photograph, and then look at some of the photographs of Elvis prior to his death, even what the month before when he did his concert. The figure in the coffin looks, first of all, it doesn't even look like Elvis to me, but then again, I saw my grandfather in the coffin, and it didn't look like my grandfather to me either. I wonder if my grandfather's really alive and hanging out with Elvis, that bastard. We got to find him, but I mean, it looks, he's got the pug nose, right. Kind of the higher back hairline. It just didn't look like Elvis in the coffin. So there was, you know, considerable talk about that as well. But one of the other strange...
Many people said the same thing. One of the... You get so many stories, Dave, that it really sometimes is hard to find the credibility line in all of them. But what was in common was how many people said that it appeared to be a wax dummy, and there were beads of sweat. Gene Smith, Elvis's first cousin, Gene's mom and Elvis's mom were sisters, told me that when he went to the house and for the private viewing, he said he knew it wasn't Elvis. He said to Vernon, he said, that's not Elvis. He said one of the sideburns had come loose, and he had to glue it down. And Vernon told him it was not Elvis in the coffin. Now, that doesn't mean Elvis was alive. It could have been simply that they were wanting to show the public something, and I'm not sure why they would do that. But that in itself doesn't state he was alive, but apparently there was something else in the coffin, and that certainly if you do a profile of Elvis and actually do the measurements, get the profile of Elvis, he had a very, very good profile, very aquiline nose and so forth. He didn't have a pug nose. I said to one of Elvis's friends on one of the TV shows that people complained about the pug nose, and the fella said, well, that's because when Elvis died, he fell on his nose. But I can tell you, if you sleep on your face all night long in the pillow, you really don't wake up with a pug nose. So
yeah, that's true.
I don't think that's what it was, but it seems as though, according to many, many people, that it was not Elvis in the coffin.
Now, they actually have audio of Elvis as well from his concert tour in 77, where one of the comments, kind of throwaway comments he makes on stage, and I think it was the month prior to his death, wasn't it? He made a comment along the lines of, I may not look good tonight, but I'm going to look good in my coffin.
Correct.
And then at a different time, he says, I know I look fat now and I look terrible for my TV special coming up, but I'll tell you this, I'm going to look good in my casket.
Right, right. He did say things like that. He even said goodbye to people. I sent you some pictures that were really interesting.
Yeah.
And you see that they were taken June 26, 1977 in Indianapolis for Elvis's last tour. And I think they were 4 days after his CBS TV special.
Mm-hmm.
In the CBS TV special, he looked very fat, very bloated. And he's wearing the same sundial suit. But then you see the other pictures, and there's only 4 days difference. The suit and he appear at least 50 pounds lighter. If you have been able to get any of the CBS footage, it's interesting to look at.
Oh, yeah, you can find it on YouTube. They're all over. I went in and checked that right away when we got off the phone. And you can pull up Elvis's last concert stuff on CBS. There's clips from the songs there. And you can see him in the sundial. And he does look puffy. I mean, not even puffy. He looks huge.
Yes, he does.
For this concert. And for a man who was so vain.
I know. But did you notice his arms and legs were not?
Right.
That was interesting. And a couple times, if you notice, when he tried to bend, he could not bend. He would stoop, and again, when you're looking at these, you have to, and I haven't looked at them for years myself, but you can see some padding. Now, Geraldo Rivera did a show one time where they padded him up and did his face to look so bloated, and it was just amazing what you could do. But when you actually see the pictures of Elvis in his sundial suit 4 days different from the CBS special, there is a big difference. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It appears almost to be hanging on him.
Yes. And if you go to Graceland and see this sundial suit, which is on display, it's not that of an obese man. Elvis was, I'm sure, slightly overweight, but he wasn't the way he was on the CBS special. 4 days difference, and you could see the difference. And I don't know how you could lose. If you could lose 50 pounds in 4 days, I want that diet.
Yeah, so do I. Well, yeah. It'll be on Oprah next week. It's the Elvis Presley Quick Fix Diet. It'll be on Oprah, I swear.
That's right.
Let me mention this, too. And we'll start getting more into some of the weird stuff. But I called you right after I saw this. And as a matter of fact, I was sitting here in the studio on Elvis's birthday, and I'm watching the TVs in here, and they're interviewing Priscilla Presley.
Correct.
And they're talking to her, and I'm watching the scroll underneath of what's being said. And what I find interesting is Larry King presses Priscilla at one point. He goes, isn't it kind of weird that we celebrate the death of the celebrity? You know, why we don't really celebrate any other celebrity's death. And she said, yeah, well, you know, he's a very giving man and did a lot, and people really have fond memories and thoughts of him. And he said, yeah, I get that. And he goes, so he's 74 years old, huh? And Priscilla gets this faraway kind of look in her eyes as she looks off camera, and she goes, yeah, as I sit here, I just have a hard time thinking, oh, my gosh, he's 74.
Yeah, I can't believe he's 74.
Yeah, I can't believe he's 74. And then she makes another comment, not talking about it as though he could have been 74 or he would have been 74, but she makes another comment along the lines of, yeah, you know, he's 74. It's really strange to have him at this age. And then at the end of the interview, Larry King, it's just kind of a throwaway line. He says, Priscilla, tell Elvis happy birthday for us. And she just looks at the camera without a beat and says, okay, Larry, I'll tell him.
I'll tell them. I know. Well, the Priscilla thing's been very, very interesting. And I know, gosh, Priscilla's had to have a lot to go through, especially when I get to the point of Operation Fountain Pen. But it's kind of interesting because she has produced a film, a full feature film, called Finding Graceland.
Right. Let's talk about that. We got to take a break here. Okay. We'll talk about that. Finding Graceland is interesting. I want to mention that as well. And then we're going to start going back through some of the actual facts from back when the death occurred. But we'll talk a little bit about this film as well and Priscilla's ties to it. Gail, joining us on the line as well, we have Larry Geller, and he's coming in last minute. Larry, thanks for spending a few minutes with us this evening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm here.
I appreciate that, Larry. Now,
is this Dave?
Yes, it is. This is Dave from Darkness Radio. We got you on air. And Larry, I actually talked to your niece Christine, and she was telling me that you were the hairdresser for Elvis Presley. Is that correct?
Well, that's one of the jobs I had, so to speak.
Okay.
I met Elvis back in 1957 when I was a kid, and I met him out here in Los Angeles. He was appearing at the Pan Pacific Auditorium. And I was in high school, and I ran up to him, and I said hello, and it was just an amazing experience for me. 3 years later, I'm out of high school, I grew up, and we opened the very first salon for men for hairstyling in America. And within a matter of several weeks, we became the number one salon in America, doing everyone from Frank Sinatra, Steve McQueen, Rock Hudson, Marlon Brando, named the celebrity, and they came to us. In 1964, I got a phone call one afternoon, and it was one of Elvis's people invited me to come up to Elvis's house. And at that time, I was doing a lot of top celebrities like Steve McQueen, Peter Sellers, Roy Orbison. And the thought of going up to meet Elvis, That was over the top, because, I mean, he is and was the greatest star in the history of show business.
Sure.
So went up to the house, and I walked in, and as I'm walking in, I'm remembering this little skinny kid looking up at Elvis and shaking his hand. And now I walk up to Elvis, and I'm having a flashback. Now I'm looking down at Elvis because I'm 6'2". Elvis was 5'11 and a half.
Right.
Puts his hand out, introduces himself. We go into his bathroom, and the next 3 hours changed both of our lives. We got into a conversation that was remarkable. I did Elvis's hair, took about 45 minutes, and when I was through, I sprayed it. And I said, "Elvis, what do you think?" And he spun around in the chair, and he said, "Oh, great, great, beautiful job." He didn't really care. He looks at me, and he says, "Mariel, who are you? What are you into? What are you really all about?" I thought to myself, whoa, man, that's really pretty straightforward.
Sure.
And I said, "Well, Elvis, you know that I work with celebrities, with Sinatra and McQueen and all these people. But to answer your question, what's more important to me than anything else in life is my search for truth, my search for God. I mean, why are we here?
Sure.
Do we have souls? Do we survive this life? Is this the end of it all? What is this all about?" I said, "Hey, I realize you're Elvis Presley. You are the biggest star on planet Earth. This probably sounds corny to you." And he said, "Whoa, man, wait. Just wait a second, Larry. You have no idea how I need to hear what you have to say. Please just keep on talking." Well, this conversation got much deeper. I told Elvis about all the spiritual books I read. And remember, this is 1964.
Right.
This is before the cultural explosion of the 60s. This is when the Beatles just first was coming on the scene. This is before anything really happened. No one spoke about yoga and meditation, and self-realization, spiritual growth. And this is what I talked to Elvis about. And we got into some very deep realities about his life And I never forget, Dave, he says to me, why, Larry, why was I plucked out of all the millions and millions of lives to be Elvis and to have the life and career that I have? I know there's got to be a reason. There's got to be a meaning. He said, there's no such thing as coincidence. And this conversation really got into some very interesting inner dimensions of both of our lives. I told him a lot of intimate things about myself, and he shared with me. And at the end of the 3 hours, I said, Elvis, I got to get back to the salon. They're waiting for me. He said, well, I've got a great idea. Go back there, but tell them you quit. You got to work for me full-time, man.
Wow.
What do you think? And you got to bring me some of those spiritual books you've been telling me about.
And you've actually got a book out right now that you're touring with, right? It's called Elvis's Spiritual Journey?
No.
Oh, all right.
I have a book that I wrote myself called Leaves of Elvis's Garden.
Oh.
And it centers upon Elvis's spiritual journey. That's true. And it gets into his hopes, his dreams, his struggles, his aspirations. And Elvis became a voracious reader. And over the years, I brought him every metaphysical, spiritual book on the planet. And by the end of his life, he amassed a tremendous library. In fact, several hours before Elvis passed away, I gave him a book to read, and he died reading this book. And then I went to the mortuary the day after he passed away, and I prepared his hair for the last time for his funeral.
Well, that's what we wanted to talk to you about now. As you know, we have on the line with us Gail Brewer Giorgio, who's written many books about the possibility that Elvis may not have died and that he may have faked his death. There's been a lot of speculation.
Oh, that's such nonsense.
That, right, that, yeah, that in the casket.
You know, when I was told I was going to be on this show, I thought it was, you know, for real. That's absurd.
Well, you know, I'm curious, how do you respond to there were claimants by not just one, but many people that said that in the coffin, the body had sweat beads that one of the sideburns appeared to be pulling off.
Wait a minute, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking to someone who prepared Elvis's body for his funeral.
Right, and that's why we're having you on to talk to you.
You're not going to talk to anyone closer to the reality of the situation. And that body in the coffin was the body, sadly, tragically, of Elvis Presley. And that's the bottom line. What else is there to say?
Well, and that's what I'm asking you. You know, some of the
people who weren't even there.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and that's why I'm asking you, as somebody that did have a part of this. Was there any, you know, like I said, claims that one of the sideburns had been coming loose?
Nonsense. Who says that?
It's been reported through quite a few different spots.
Reported by who?
Well, we've got Gail online. Gail, who did you say was one of the people that helped to report that story?
Hey, Larry, long time.
Yeah, hi, Gail.
I understand you've gotten married since you and I met in California.
This is true. What year was that?
When we met?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious.
95?
No, I think it was, wasn't it?
No, you're right. No, it was 93-ish. That's right.
92,
yeah,
90,
that's
yeah.
right, because I got married in 95.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
At any rate,
there's people. There are people that that claim things all the time. I'm the person who prepared Elvis for his funeral. I'm the last person to touch him when the lid came down on the coffin. That was Elvis Presley. End of story. But there's more important things to talk about than that. If you're talking about Elvis Presley, we're talking about the greatest star that ever lived. We're talking about someone who. His home is the number one visited home in America. He has sold more records and albums than any individual or group that has ever recorded.
And I think that's why the fascination is out there for people not wanting to let go of a superstar like this who had such an impact and an effect.
Well, they don't have to let go of him. They can enjoy his music, his movies, read about him. There's some fantastic. In my new book, by the way, Dave.
Uh-huh.
Elvis, as I was explaining to you earlier, was a tremendous reader, and he explored the world's great religions and metaphysical systems. In this book, I have quotes and passages that Elvis was magnetically drawn to. I have pages from his books that he underlined and made marginal notes. That's what's interesting about Elvis Presley. Who was this man? Who was this guy that was born in the poorest state in America, that was born in a shack? Not only did they not have electricity, they didn't even have rain water in the house.
Right.
They had no pipes. They had to go outside and get water from a well. And this man became the number one celebrity on this planet. Now, who is he? What was he really all about? That's more fascinating, more interesting, and there's more to say about that than, you know, someone said he had fake sideburns. That's absurd. He didn't. I worked on his sideburns. Those are Elvis's.
All right. Well, Larry, that's why we wanted to bring you on, and I appreciate your input on this. And I'm going to extend the invitation now. I'd like to have you on in a month or so. We can have you come on.
Dave, that would be great.
And talk about the spiritual journey.
Gail's voice, that's lovely. And if you want to do this again, we can get into a lot of... got some great stories to tell you.
I'd love
to.
We'll
do it again.
I appreciate that, Larry. We'll give you a call back. We'll plan on having you on in a month or so. We'll follow up more on Elvis's spiritual journey and get some insights from you. Thanks for spending time with us.
All right.
Gail, you stay with us. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back and do some more with Gail Brewer Giorgio. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the show. It's Beyond the Darkness. Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader, who is in England this week. And next week, we should tell you all new shows. This week is kind of a way back week as we revisit some of our best ofs this week. Next week, all new shows. So I'll be hosting next week with all new shows. And then Dave returns the week after that. Today, we have an amazing show with Gail Brewer Giorgio. We are observing the 40th anniversary of Elvis's death by replaying a show that we did with Gail Brewer Giorgio, who is the foremost author on the Elvis conspiracy theory, the death of Elvis conspiracy theory. And is he alive? And that whole question. We're right in the thick of things with Gail, so let's return to the program. This is Gail Brewer Giorgio on Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tonight we're straying a little bit from the normal, staying away from ghosts, UFOs, and Bigfoot, and we're talking about Elvis. And I guess in a way Elvis was kind of supernatural his own self, wasn't he, Gail?
Well, I think he had a really healthy interest.
I mean, just the way this man transcended all religions, all faiths, all races, everybody loved the guy. Interesting stuff.
He also believed in the power of three, as we were talking about.
Right.
He believed in pyramid power. And, you know, there's a big pyramid now in Memphis.
Right.
He believed in numerology. When he was little, he used to tell his mother that he talked to angels.
Now, he also predicted his own death at his age, didn't he? Because
well,
that was around the same age as his mom's passing?
Well, they really weren't the same age when they passed. She always was given a younger age because she actually was older than Vernon.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that, of course, you know, August 16th, 1977 added up to 2001, which was his theme song.
Right.
One of the things before we pass on quick to Operation Fountain Pen, and I think it's important, is that I'm not trying to keep a legend alive. I'm only reporting what is being done. Now, we have right here at least six people, Priscilla, who did the movie Finding Graceland, and as you've mentioned, has said some very strange things.
Right.
And there's even a longer list. Marty Lacker, that's Priscilla in Elvis's Best Man, say he's alive, and they go to great extent on showing how he faked his death. Billy Smith, the cousin, says the same thing. He's alive. He faked his death. Gene Smith says that he is alive, that that was not Elvis in the coffin. In his own book, he says that the conclusion to Elvis's life has not happened yet, and time will know that. May Axton had heard from him and told me he was alive. Now, we're talking about people very, very close to Elvis. I mean, I don't think he was much closer than his wife.
I got in the chat room, User86 comes out and says, ask her, what made her first believe that Elvis is not dead? What was your first trigger point for you?
The very first. I heard rumors, and you probably did too, almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That something was wrong. Of course, you know, if Elvis did all this, he did leave a lot of clues. You know, the gravestone, headstone.
Right. Well, let's go. Let me run through these real quick. Some of the main clues people might not be aware of, but we'll get through them. First of all, Elvis's name is misspelled on his tombstone. Elvis's full name is Elvis Aaron Presley, spelled with one A.
Correct.
On the gravestone, it appears with two A's.
Correct.
Elvis A-A-R-O-N. His father would not have let this happen. When Elvis was born, his name was misspelled on the birth certificate, and his father went to great lengths to get the error corrected.
Correct.
The spelling of Elvis's name was very important to the Presley family. They wanted Elvis to see that Aaron was part of Garen, which is the middle name for Elvis's twin brother that was a stillborn.
Right.
So why the misspelling on the tombstone? Some say it's because Elvis didn't want to tempt fate. Also, Elvis's current resting place is in between his father and his grandmother and not next to his mother, where he had adamantly requested to be buried.
Correct.
So it's doubtful that the people closest to him would allow things like this to happen. And Elvis was a very superstitious man. So, you know, why tempt fate again by putting the tombstone in the right place with the right name and everything listed out there? Also, here's some of the other points. Elvis was a very vain man and was embarrassed about his recent weight gain. An astonishing 50 pounds in the month before his so-called death. Even though he weighed 250 pounds at the time of his death certificate lists him as a spry 170 pounds. The original death certificate disappeared, and the current death certificate is dated 2 months after his alleged death. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, of course it's going to weigh less because they remove all the internal organs, but they don't put on there the weight after removal of organs. They always put the weight after death.
Correct.
So that would be a huge swing in a poundage. Now, the other interesting point is that the handwriting on the second death certificate has been looked at and has gone through forensic analysis and is actually believed to be the handwriting of Elvis Presley as well.
Yes, we had that done, and other people have tested us. And we have all the mechanisms that they use to do that. And it's kind of interesting, too, because where it said occupation, he wrote entertainer, which is how he always wrote what he was as
right.
an entertainer, not a singer, not an actor, but he always wrote entertainer. And I don't make these things up. I didn't etch the grave or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
All I do is report it. When Larry was on, and Larry plays a role in this that he perhaps doesn't know, we'll get into later, all the books that Elvis wrote,
mm-hmm.
or read, rather, the books on display at Graceland are very, very interesting, and I don't have all the list in front of me, but one of them's the Passover plot, which is the basis of how Jesus hoaxed his own death.
Right.
There was several others that all were about faking your death. Recently, and I sent you a picture of this, I'll forget to say it once we get into Penn, but on the Parker collection at Graceland, there's a watch there that Elvis gave to Colonel Tom Parker. And again, these are clues that one might look at Graceland. It has 1956 to 1980. How could Elvis have given it to him late?
That's true. Let's go through some of these other ones for people, the basic stuff, before we get into your deeper stuff. Elvis's coffin required several pallbearers because it weighed 900 pounds. Attendants at the funeral reported that the air around the coffin was rather cool, suspected that the coffin contained an air conditioning unit or dry ice to keep a wax body cool, a wax body that was a replica of Elvis designed to fool funeral goers. People want to know, how did the Presley family get a 900-pound custom-made coffin ready for the showing of the body that was held on the day after his death? It takes a lot of time to build such an elaborate coffin. Alana Nash, formerly of the old Louisville Courier-Journal, who viewed the body in the casket twice, commented on how wax it looked. LaCosta was a sister of Tanya Tucker, said, "We were right up to the casket and stood there, and God, I couldn't believe it. He looked like a piece of plastic laying there. He didn't even look like Elvis. He looked like a dummy, more like a dummy than a real person." Also, why was the funeral so done so quickly? A lot of people speculate that the immediacy was to intend to keep people that would know Elvis away from being able to attend that quickly. Also, Elvis was an eighth-degree black belt whose hands were rough with calluses, yet the body in the coffin had hands that were soft and pudgy. The body in the coffin also had a pug nose and arched eyebrows, unlike Elvis. And most importantly, one of the sideburns of the corpse, as we mentioned earlier, was falling off. And they said that one of his cousins glued it back down. 2 hours after Elvis' death was announced publicly, a man who reportedly looked remarkably like Elvis purchased a ticket for Buenos Aires, paid for it in cash, and used the name John Burroughs, which was a name that Elvis used as an alias several times. He also had a few books that were considered to be his most prized possessions. He had a Bible, several pharmaceutical books, books on death, and most importantly, Chiro's Book of Numbers and the Autobiography of a Yogi. After his death was announced, these books disappeared and were never recovered. Also missing were specific pieces of jewelry and pictures of his mother. And then in the weeks preceding his alleged death, Elvis's actions were not those of a man who was about to embark on an extensive U.S. tour. He ordered no new suits despite having gained 50 pounds since his last tour. He fired several employees that he had relied upon for a long time. And then 2 days before his death, Elvis telephoned a friend of his named Miss Foster. She'd been friends with him for a long time, said that he told her he wasn't planning on going on the upcoming tour, that it had been canceled. And when he had asked if she was ill, she said he was fine and that she should not ask any more questions or tell anything that she would not believe what she reads. Just kind of go over that, brushing that person aside, telling him, don't worry about what you're about to hear. Also, the day after Elvis's alleged death, a woman named Lucy DeBaron, a former lover of Elvis, received a single rose in the mail. The card indicated that the flower was from El Lancelot, spelled E-L Lancelot, and this had been her pet name for Elvis, and it was a name that no one else knew, and flowers can't be sent from beyond the grave. Now, these are all tips and clues you've heard as well, correct?
Yes, correct.
Also, Elvis had other reasons to fake his death. Elvis's life was in danger, and we're going to talk about that. He had recently lost $1,300,000 in an airplane real estate deal with the California-based organization called the Fraternity that had links to the mafia. It's speculated that he corroborated with the government to expose the organized crime ring in exchange for protection. We all know he was a prisoner of his own fame, so there's a good reason to try to get out of it. And he had the means to fake his death. He's accused of destroying himself with drugs when in reality, Elvis was a pharmaceutical expert. He took a lot of drugs, but he knew what he was doing. And in most part, people say that he was extremely careful. He knew what drugs he could self-administer to create a death-like state, according to some. Now, again, that's kind of speculation because we're getting a lot of the hearsay in this. Let me see. Elvis's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, had once created a new identity for himself. He came into the country as an illegal immigrant from Holland, but through a various of connections, managed to create an elaborate identity complete with a passport, birth certificate, driver's license, and a social security number. So he would have known how to give Elvis a second life for sure. Now, on this one I've heard is interesting. Elvis's Lloyd's of London life insurance policy is still not cashed in.
That's what I heard as well.
And, the main reason you would assume that is because it's not illegal to fake your death as long as you don't profit from it.
Correct.
So is this Lloyd's of London policy sign that, well, we can't cash it in because, they will do an investigation?
And you don't have to necessarily cash a policy in.
Right.
You can keep a policy and collect interest and let it grow. I'm playing devil's advocate with myself here.
Sure.
But that's for a man who supposedly had some financial problems and the estate did then, doesn't now. Some of those things were very, very strange.
There was the helicopter, too.
Go ahead.
Which was what? There was a helicopter that hovered over Graceland just moments before Elvis was found dead.
Yes, and actually, a sheriff I talked to.
Nicholson, right?
He had a book out, which I don't want to tread on his book. But,
sure.
He was seen going off in a helicopter. There's so much. And we were talking about Elvis being recognized and so forth. And you had said something about Elvis being spotted and this and that sort of thing. And, of course, there's probably more Elvis lookalikes on this planet than we can even imagine. But a story I was told by one of his friends at Graceland you probably heard it too, is before he, quote, died, there was a call for lookalikes at a Memphis theater. And he always got a kick out of it. And he went upstairs and kind of put a little black on his sideburns, because normally his hair was gray, as Larry can tell you, he dyed it. And he put on his Elvis outfit and the glasses and drove himself down to the theater and mingled with all the people that look like him. They're going, hey, baby, he's going, hey, baby. And then he comes back to the house, and he's telling everybody about it, and they're laughing. He said, no, that's not what's funny. He said, I tried out and didn't make it. So they didn't think he looked or sounded like the real Elvis. Which goes to show you probably could walk around. And there's a story.
And there's so many people out there that try to look like Elvis that there's probably a good enough chance he could sneak in and around and nobody would be able to pick
Colonel
up on it.
Colonel Parker one time challenged Elvis and said, because Elvis was complaining. They were in Vegas. He was complaining about not being able to lead a normal life and walk the streets. And Colonel said, I'm going to make a bet with you. You just come on out, dress like Elvis. And he said, just stand against a building with, just stand there and let people walk by. He did. He stood for an hour. Nobody bothered him.
Interesting. We have to take another break. Gil, when we come back, I want to start getting into this. We also have a fun little parody song that we're going to play in a little bit here. good little fun song. I thought you'd even get a kick out of. We'll be back with more, and we're going to get into the heart of this matter, talking about Project Fountain Pen, and I'm going to need you to just pour it all out as soon as we come back. All right, Gil? All right, we'll be back with more. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio.
And I want to talk to you about our favorite haunt, blindsgalore.com. As it comes to the paranormal and the strange, I am considered an expert in the field, but I also know my limitations. And Tim, you know I have many limitations,
well,
especially when it comes to keeping up with the house.
Yeah.
I'm not a handy man, Tim.
Well.
I'm not even a mildly handy man. I love to have somebody else do the work for me because I find a way to mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to one of the big box stores to get some blackout blinds, these really nice blinds for my house. I got them cut wrong. It took me forever to figure out how to get them mounted and get them put up. I'm just not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Blinds Galore has become a salvation point for me, because they're the experts when it comes to custom window coverings. Whether you're looking for blinds, shades, shutters, or drapery, like the fancy folk use, Tim, they have it all and they make it easy. These are 100% custom window treatments built to your exact measurements down to every little detail. It's a designer product without the designer price tag, and you'll save a ton compared to the big box stores. You'll get a custom product made just for your windows, and it's a killer deal. Blinds Galore has covered millions of windows, and they make it easy to get a completely custom product that you'll love. This isn't a hoax. They've got free shipping and will even send you up to 15 free samples right to your door. Don't ask for 16, Tim. They drew the line at 15.
Really?
15 free samples right to your door, all for free, and you can do it right from your own home. So from start to finish, measuring, picking out the perfect window covering, and installing it, their team of in-house experts will be there to guide you every step of the way, online or over the phone. So put a toe tag on your boring old blinds and upgrade to something special with BlindsGalore.com. BlindsGalore.com makes it easy to cover your windows so you don't have to see all the things that go bump in the night. Check out BlindsGalore.com. Let them know your old pal from Beyond the Darkness sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
You're listening to Darkness Radio. We're going back to our guest, Gil Brewer Giorgio, and we're talking about Elvis, the possibilities that Elvis did not die. So we're going to hammer the facts here quick because time is slipping away from us, Gail. Let's go with Project Fountain Pen and the new information that you've been putting together for the book that you're working on now.
Yeah. Well, this is astonishing. People might remember that Elvis was appointed a special DEA agent back in 1970 by President Nixon. This is important to know because we're going to get into why the FBI called upon him. In fact, Larry Geller was with Elvis. And Elvis showed him the black book that only true agents get. This was June 26, 1977. And he said, Larry Geller said that Elvis is scared and nervous. After dozing off, Elvis begins to mumble in a frightened voice how they're going to get Lisa, they're going to trap her. During this time, Elvis states that Lisa will be brought to Graceland and that, quote, many changes will be made. Okay, let's find out what was going on that made him nervous and so forth. In 1974, the FBI began one of its most important and Dangerous Investigations. This was called Operation Fountain Pen, or Pen for short. It was a highly classified and secretive investigation that continued through 75, 76, and 77. Now, this undercover investigation focused upon an organization called the Fraternity, which was characterized by the FBI as being composed of approximately 30 to 40 of the world's top racketeers. Now, some of the members were connected to powerful mafia bosses, including the notorious Gambino family. One fraternity member was an old partner of New Jersey mafia boss Sam the Plumber DeCavalcanti. Now, many of these fraternity members of the fraternity had victimized countless people for billions of dollars, millions of dollars. By the time the FBI succeeded in infiltrating the fraternity in 76 and 77, the criminal activity was an all-time high. What they needed, Dave, was a victim to testify against the mob. And, you know, that's kind of hard. Because victims often get terrorized, and sometimes they don't show up at all. They went to Elvis Presley. Now, why would they have gone to Elvis Presley? First of all, one of the members of the fraternity, Peter Pro, was Elvis's airplane broker. And at this point, Elvis had already been swindled out of a great deal of money. And so they convinced Elvis that if he would work with them in testifying against these men, they could bring them to trial. Now, remember, everybody else would not testify against these men. But Elvis decided to do it. He would testify it. He would serve America, because that's what he said he would do when he was appointed a DEA agent. So then the Elvis Aaron Presley, who was the man that testified, Penn then became the Presley case. Now, the truth is, Elvis put his life on the line for this country. In fact, if I think I sent you one of these documents.
Yep.
It shows the Department of Treasury.
Yes.
And they're dated 82, November, December. And it does say that there's an undercover agent in Elvis's band. There's two letters there.
That's right.
Right. Now, what I did, and of course, we're just there, unless you get the FBI files, you're going to have to take my word they exist. I went over 30,000 pieces of paper. It's an interesting case, and that's why I had to, I actually had to get a document examiner to look at the FBI files to glean from it a readable story, because if you've read FBI files, there's a lot of blackouts. These files were not readily available when Elvis, quote, died. But the truth is, Elvis was working on this case up until and after August 16th, 1977. In fact, on August 15th, 1977, Elvis testified to the Memphis grand jury behind closed doors. On August 15th, he began to testify against the mob. On the 16th, Elvis was out of there because the mob can't kill a man that's dead.
Right.
That's the case in the nutshell without, you know, going through all the intricacies. However, there's an interesting timeline that deals with, I'm trying to get it here on my desk so I don't foul it up, that deals actually with what Elvis was doing during this time. May 6th of 77, now remember, Operation Fountain Pen is winding down. Elvis is going to have to get out of there. Elvis is going to have to appear to the public to be dead. The mafia probably wouldn't believe he was dead unless his body was put on display, because he was only 42 years old.
Right.
You know, he had never...
Now, this is in one of the files?
The what?
The information that you're reading.
Yeah, well, this is, yeah, the timeline is all, you have to glean it out. It's not the way I have it, you know,
right,
what I'm doing for research. Okay, on May 6, 1977, Elvis told his backup singer, Kathy Westmoreland, he said, "I look fat now, but I'm going to look good in my casket." June of 77 became one of the busiest months of Elvis's life. two separate tours are scheduled. Colonel Parker has already cut a deal with CBS for a live tape concert. On June 13, 77, Elvis calls President Jimmy Carter at the White House at 6:10 p.m. Call's not completed. At 8:43 p.m., Elvis again calls the president. Call's not completed. On June 14th, President Jimmy Carter calls Elvis at Graceland at 5:18 p.m. Presley and the president talk for 6 minutes. Approximately one half hour later, the president's contacted by Peter D. Benziker, who's the administrator of the DEA, of which Presley's an agent. Now, Elvis's stepbrother, David Stanley, happened to be present when Elvis received the call from the president.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis politely asked David to leave the room, stating, "This is kind of heavy. I got to take it alone." On the 15th now, Elvis Presley again calls Jimmy Carter at the White House. This call's not completed. It was U.S. Attorney Michael Cody who, via the FBI, enabled Elvis to get through to the White House. Now, this is important. Michael Cody of the FBI is the one that helped Elvis get through to the White House, because you really can't call up and say, "I want to speak to the president."
Right.
Try it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have. He never takes my calls.
This is the same Michael Cody that was responsible for the prosecution of the Presley case in connection with Operation Fountain Pen.
All right, let's stop with that. We have to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll come back from the break. We're going to play this fun little parody song, and then we're going to continue on with the rest of the information that you have, okay?
Okay.
So stick with us. Gail Brewer, Giorgio, is our guest. Is Elvis alive? We're about to find out more information than you're probably ready for. We're going to be right back here on Darkness Radio.
So sorry, but we'll stay apart. Does your memory stray to that hot August day when the pills and the grease stopped my heart? Will the trailer you came from seem empty and bare when I'm 6 feet under and staying right there? Though your heart fills with pain, I won't come back again. Sorry, dear, you'll be lonesome tonight.
You wonder why you're lonesome tonight. Well, you know, someone said all the world's a stage and each must play a part. Well, fate made you a sick groupie, thinking we're sweethearts. Your first act was joining thousands of other pilgrims from all over the world, spending your entire life savings to come to Graceland. Well, then came act two. You look like a fool running to the pool when the tour guide said I was a mom and daddy out back. Honey, you cried, said you love me with candle wax dripping all over your hand tonight. But I'm not the Great Pumpkin and some Charlie Brown flick, and coming here each year, it just ain't right. Why? 'Cause I'm dead. And believe me, honey, there's no doubt. So go get some of that Lemon Tender Kleenex at the gift shop on your way out. Write your name by the gate. You're more than 20 years too late. Sorry, dear, you'll be lonesome too.
Gail, could it say it any better?
Oh, that was so cute. I remember when he said, when the song says candle wax on the hands.
Yeah.
Do you remember in that call that I received?
Right.
I said something to the man that certainly wanted me to believe he was Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
That people said it was a wax dummy in the coffin, and he laughed. He said, well, thank God nobody lit it. It had been a meltdown, and
right.
We were meltdown. So it kind of reminded me of that, you know, if it was Elvis on the phone, he had a sense of humor.
Right, and you did receive a phone call from somebody claiming to be Elvis. You recorded as much of the conversation as you could, and you actually had people that knew him weigh in on it, and a lot of people did analyze it and say that they do believe that it was Elvis that had contacted you. So that's, again, interesting stuff. And I'll mention real quick, Joe CP from our chat room says he's an embalmer, a funeral director, and there is another discrepancy. The form that everyone is claiming to be Elvis's autopsy report is not an autopsy report. It's just a medical examiner's report. If you look
that's
on
right.
it, it says autopsy to be performed at Baptist Hospital.
That's right. It is a medical exam. Tell him he is absolutely right.
And the autopsy reports are like 40 pages or so in length. The form that's supposed to be Elvis's autopsy report mm-hmm. is one page back in front.
Yeah.
And that's the alleged
autopsy
report.
And then all autopsy remains were destroyed.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's, we're going to have to motor through here now. So you've got the timeline going.
We were talking about June. Now, he's been a very busy man. And remember, this whole time Operation Fountain Pen is going on and Elvis is working it. In June of 77, when Elvis is on stage, he mutters to the audience, and I am, and I was. June 16th, Elvis discusses with Larry Geller the paradoxes of his life, and he turns serious and he says to Larry, things are part of a master plan and some things cannot be explained, at least not yet. Of course, he's working on Penn at this time. On the 21st, that's a CBS TV special, Elvis looks heavy and bloated, the worst he's ever appeared. Before going on stage, he frowns sadly, then turns to stepbrother Rick Stanley and says, know what, Ricky, I may not look too good for my TV special tonight, but I'll look good in my coffin. On June 26th, and he looked better in his coffin. He looked less than he did on that padded stage that he was on with those whatever he had on.
Yeah.
Because on June 26th, he's in Indianapolis. That's 4 days later, and he is... Apparently, the suit's hanging. He's agile. He's limber. He's bending with ease. His face tanned and slim. Only 4 days earlier, his face was ashen and badly bloated. He also told people, America will see me at my worst, meaning the CBS special. Now, you know Elvis would not have allowed America to see him at his worst.
Right, exactly. He was very vain and wanted, you know, he looked good.
And I think we would all feel it. He had to look his worst. He had to. No one knew what Penn was about, that his life was in danger.
Mm-hmm.
On June 26th, that's where Elvis showed Larry the DEA, U.S. Justice Department's black book, where he was an agent, and he mutters he was afraid they were going to get Lisa. On June 26th, he holds his final concert in Indianapolis, which, by the way, is the same city where the Operation Fountain Pen investigations originated. June 26th to August 8th, now that's where it's interesting. Numerous FBI memos and reports are being transmitted between the Memphis FBI office, FBI headquarters. It's anticipated, and this is in the files, by the way, by the Memphis field office that the Presley case will be presented to the federal grand jury on or before August 15th of 77. Now on August 14th, he puts his arms, Elvis puts his arms around his stepbrother, David Stanley, who's leaving for Nashville, and hugs him hard, then cries. Elvis says to David, I just want to tell you I'll never see you again, but I love you very much. August 14th, Elvis makes that telephone call you talked about to Ellen Foster, basically says that something's planned, I'm not sick, I've never felt better in my life, that all my troubles are ending. He asked Ellen not to question him, blah, blah, blah. August 15th, Elvis puts on his DEA jogging suit. He seems nervous but also happily excited. He suddenly decides to make an emergency visit to his dentist. Now, this is in the middle of the night. Throughout the night, he's happy. He sings. He plays the piano, plays racquetball, and makes telephone calls. He's a busy man for having done all these drugs, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, boy, I'll tell you, I take an aspirin, I go to sleep.
Right.
August 16th, Elvis is found lying on the bathroom floor. And, of course, it's an almost unexplainable death. Now, here's something interesting a lot of people don't know. Vernon Presley gives a radio interview to WHBQ Sid Leek shortly after Elvis is pronounced dead. I mean, this is within hours. Vernon, in a matter-of-fact tone, tells Leek that he'd seen his son the night before, that everything seemed fine, that Elvis was in great shape, a little overweight, but not as fat as the newspapers made him out to be. Unemotionally, Vernon says, it's hard to believe Elvis is gone. A few hours later, he signs a deal with Colonel Tom Parker. Now, this is a man that lost the most famous son in the world.
Right.
And he's doing this.
Well, now let's start getting into to some of the major paperwork, too, with the FBI. I know time's slipping away from us here.
Yeah.
Now, if I read this correctly, there's over 663 FBI pages on Elvis, and most of that material consists of files dated after August 1977.
They're classified top secret for the national security of our nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you find out what was going on after August 16th, it becomes equally interesting. Do you remember August 18th, Elvis Presley was buried in a mausoleum at Forest Hill Cemetery?
Right.
But October 2nd, the body is quietly removed from Forest Hill and placed on the grounds of Graceland. And Graceland's now under tight securities. Now, I talked to people right across the street from Graceland, where the gift stores are.
Right.
They never, ever saw anything dug. Nothing dug at all.
Well,
and all those bodies were suddenly put in the ground.
Oh, well, that's true. But, I mean, but that part of the Meditation Gardens is so far back, removed from the road. I mean, Graceland's pretty far up from the road.
It is.
And then the shops are way across the street. So, I mean, they could have dug and not noticed.
I guess they could have had big trucks and stuff. But
right. And there was a back exit, so people could have, sure, you know, they could have dragged the dirt out that way.
Sure. There's always, and you're a good devil's advocate too, there's always that, but I'm just going through some of the things that,
sure,
people have said to me. They said people around the gates, you know, there are always people around the gates.
Right.
Now, on August the 13th, 77, this is where the sealed indictment is presented, and that did charge, remember, he gave his testimony on, mm-hmm, August 15th. Then they did charge.
Right, Elvis gave testimony on August 15th and was dead within...
He was gone the next day.
Right, gone the next day. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty impressive information right there, that after giving testimony, suddenly he's gone.
That's right. And then on October the 13th, Frederick Peter lists all the people that were charged. They were charged with conspiracy, fraud, interstate transportation, stolen, all kinds of things. And then it goes into October the 18th. Philip Kitzer is arrested at the Miami airport. And then Frederick Peter Pro is. These are all part of the fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
On that same day, while the arrests were being made, Dr. Jerry Francisco, Shelby County Medical Examiner, and Baptist Memorial Hospital hold a meeting with Vernon Presley at Graceland. Later that day, Francisco announces that he will hold a press conference on October 21st in order to discuss the cause of Elvis's death. Now, while the government's arresting the people involved with fountain pen, notorious criminals, another member of the government, Dr. Jerry Francisco, is gathering his forces to discuss the death.
I have a quick question from the chat room here. Are you saying that you believe he's in the witness protection program?
He would have had that option.
Okay.
And I'm sure they helped him. Let's look. When you see the timelines, and you have them there, we won't go through them all, but when you see how long it really took them to prosecute the case, because there were quite a few people, you know, each one took its own case, right? They had several trials. There were mistrials. And, in fact, Peter Pro was on the lam. He was running. He was hiding. It was rumored he was hiding because the Gambino family had issued a contract on Pro's life. Well, if Gambino had issued a contract on Pro's life, who was part of the fraternity, what do you think he would have issued on Elvis, who was the one who was testifying against them all?
Right.
So, I mean, you really get some amazing things. But to jump ahead, and I won't go through all this because hopefully we'll get the secret Mr. Presley published and everybody can really read it. And as you know, when you're reading so many FBI documents, what I do is tell you the story. I give you the number of all the documents. Everybody can check up on me. But there's one interesting document, and I sent you a copy of it. It's dated 12-14-77. That's after Elvis died, right?
Right.
And if you see it, it's an FBI document, you'll see a circle saying, name Frederick Peter Proe. I don't know if you have it in front of you.
No, I don't have it sitting here right now.
Well, that was circled because that was Elvis's handwriting. He was correcting that document. And the reason he's correcting it, when you read the document, you'll see that the FBI, whoever typed it up, had Frederick N. Proe. He X'd it out, put an X and a zero X out, and circled and said his name is Frederick Peter Proe. Another thing that was interesting is, and this is, by the way, this was compared to the last page of a letter that Elvis sent to President Nixon some years earlier, 7 years earlier. And you can see the handwriting matches. We used that. We had a court-appointed graphologist check it out. Anybody can get these documents now, and I say check it out yourself. But it appears he's doing the corrections, which would make sense because he's the victim.
Right, I agree.
He would correct and see these. So that was kind of interesting. And he also tells Nixon that he uses the name of John Burroughs. But you yourself, even with a human eye, when you look this and look at the two, you'll see, I mean, you look at the word name.
Right, a lot of the writing you showed me on the documents matches up exactly with the writing and the way that he'd do the T's and Z's and different
right.
letters all match up, and they were able to overlay that on a few of the specials that I've actually caught as well.
Well, what's also interesting, and this is really off the beaten track, but it goes into the spiritual element of Elvis. Every time we were looking at a document, they would have right over where it said Elvis A. Presley, and it'll have in the FBI deceased. But over it, he put a little circle with a dot in it. And I'm thinking, and this is all through the FBI files. Every time he corrects one and every time his name says deceased, he puts that little circle with a dot. Well, you have a tendency to say, what is that? You know, is that another little notation? What exactly does it mean? Well, in all the astrology and symbology that he studied, a circle with a dot in it actually means still on Earth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that kind of falls in line with a double A on the grave that, you know, if you're not really buried there.
Don't tempt the fates, right. You're making your
claim. And by the
way,
at the grave site, he also has the name Jesse. They have a plaque there, Jesse Guerin.
Right.
He added another letter to Jesse's name. Jesse is normally on the birth certificate, J-E-S-S-E, Guerin Presley. On his grave, Elvis should have had Elvis A-R-O-N Presley, and it should have been J-E-S-S, but he put on the plaque at Graceland, J-E-S-S-I-E.
Right.
He added another letter, just like he added another letter to his own grave, because Jesse was his twin brother. And in numerology, I guess he needed the same amount of numbers.
Well, now, let me ask you this, Gail. People are pressing me in the rooms. Do you believe Elvis Presley died in August of 1977?
No.
Do you believe that Elvis Presley is still alive?
Well, with what you said, Larry King said.
Right. And that's you can watch it. As a matter of fact, I TiVo'd it.
I saw it at myself. And but, I mean, at least your, you know, verification that did happen. I got a lot of calls on that. Did you hear what, you know... Yeah, why the movie Finding Graceland? Why Marty Lacker and them coming out and saying all these things? Priscilla, if you notice, too, Priscilla doesn't say he's dead.
No, she never refers to him as being dead in the interviews that I keep seeing.
Gone away.
Right.
And she even said to Larry a year or two ago when she had him there at Graceland, something about they were showing the, is it the jungle room where the
right.
pool table is? And she said something about, oh, Elvis just loves to come here and play pool. And and Larry said something about, you mean he used to love to play pool here, and Priscilla caught herself. Oh, yeah. I mean, she never talks about him. She calls him a living legend in many articles.
And it's an interesting thing, too, that she, you know, the divorced ex-wife of Elvis would take over his whole estate.
Well, she's not divorced. Remember I sent you the final?
Right. That's my lead-in for you.
Oh, thank you. I'm really good at this, aren't I?
No, you're doing great.
Yeah, they didn't pick up their final judgment. And Priscilla also, in her book, Elvis and Me, has a copyrighted under Graceland Incorporated. So she really wasn't his final, the ex-wife. And people used to say, you know, gosh, why is the ex-wife running the estate? Why is she in charge?
Yeah, another interesting thing a lot of people don't know, and we're running out of time here quick, though, is she had always made a comment she wouldn't have another child unless it was Elvis's, because it wouldn't be fair to that child to have Lisa Marie as her brother or sister. Yet there is another child, a boy.
March 1st, 1987.
Right, born in 1987, and the name on the birth certificate, they give the name of the father, which is, to me, sounds like a big BS name anyway, but well, there's no address, there's no...
No, he's unknown.
Right, there's no address, there's no ethnicity known, everything on the deal is unknown, and actual people have come forward that the kid has gone to private school all this time, and his name is what?
His name Navarone. Is Navarone, which if you look right in the middle, there's Aaron.
Right, A-R-O-N, again, in the middle of the name. But he vanished, or not vanished, but he's going to school. People that have actually attended the school say that he looks like a light-haired version of Elvis.
Well, when he was little, yeah. And
Elvis, of course, a lot of people don't know, had dirty blondish hair. It wasn't black. He dyed that.
Yeah, one of my agents said that his daughter and Priscilla's son were registered, and he thought it did. I looked up the pictures of him. There's not a whole lot. I kind of think he looks more like Priscilla.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I got to just wrap this up. John Cotner. Are you familiar with John Cotner?
The name rings a bell.
He's the mystery man on YouTube that looks very much like an old Elvis with white hair and beard mustache. Now, there is another gentleman. We'll wrap this up in about 10 seconds here. But there's a gentleman in Tennessee, right, that owns a huge plot of land that actually has armed guards and goes by the name of John Burroughs.
Yes.
And that was Elvis's name that he used.
That's the name he used.
This John Burroughs purchased horses from a local vendor. The vendor said, I know who you are. John Burroughs' comment said, well, good luck proving that, right?
Right.
Interesting stuff. Well, I hope your book comes out soon. We're going to keep an eye on it. Gail, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
You have a book coming out too, don't you?
Yeah, we're working on that. It'll be out this year. So thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you all for tuning into the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. For more information on Gail Brewer Giorgio, check out our website. We'll put you in touch with her. Thanks again, Gail. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back again.
So there you go, folks. That's the program with Gail Brewer Giorgio. You know, Elvis would have been 82 years old now. If you think about it, 40 years into this, do you really think Elvis has been gone all this time? Do you think he's been dead the entire time? Do you think he actually faked his death and has been able to stay away from society? Do you think he's made himself known throughout the years? I guess it's up to you to decide. A lot of people say that he's in that coffin in Graceland. And a few of the specials I saw this weekend believe that there are some people close to Elvis that believe, you know what, he's in that coffin. There's no doubt about it. Who knows? I won't weigh in on this. And maybe Dave and I will talk about it when he comes back from England in another week or so. Tomorrow, as promised, Gary Busey and Parashare. We'll do both of them tomorrow here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.